Hey, and welcome to Sox Talk on the air right here on SoxTalk.com. I am Mario Scalise, and that is Jason Gage. And Jason, it has been, what now, 3 weeks. Once again, it's been 3 weeks since our last show. Granted, it is the offseason.
Yeah, we had a bit of a hiatus, and there were a couple big moves made. And our team has went from World Series contender to World Series pretender.
Don't start like that.
In a matter of two trades.
Come on, don't start like that.
See, you go from a rotation that's six deep to a rotation that's three or four deep.
Well,
you go from a bullpen with proven studs like Neil Kotz to having a bullpen of Andy Cisco. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be real interesting.
Well, first we look at the offseason as a whole, and when you first think about it, Kenny Williams was once again aggressive. The difference is usually he's aggressive for 2006 or for 2007. He's aggressive for the upcoming year, and he takes moves. He takes chances on moves that will help the team very, very in the near future. In this case, he made a couple trades that with the intentions of them competing 2-3 years down the line. The first trade, Freddy Garcia, trading to the Philadelphia Phillies for Gio Gonzalez and Gavin Floyd.
I.E.? Long ball machine Gavin Floyd and a double-A left-hander.
Now,
we had given up for Jim Thome.
This trade I didn't very much care for. For one reason is I really think Freddy Garcia is going to come back very strong next year. I think his velocity is going to be back, and I think he learned how to pitch a little bit more along with him. I think he was throwing a little bit of a forkball at the end of the year. And you look at how he's pitching his career. You look at the salary he was given, and the salary of the guys like Mesh and Ted Lilly, the amount of money they've gotten, and you think he should be worth more than the two pitchers they did get.
Well, clearly, and I know you said forkball, but it was technically a split finger that he was throwing.
Yes.
And he did a good job with it. His velocity was down, but he was, he even commented, he had a dead arm. He was tired from that whole season, and he'll probably come back and pitch very well for Philly. Although he's in the Gopher ballpark, so he's going to give up quite a few home runs for the Phillies. However, it was a move the Phillies needed to make, and Floyd was not going to have any success in Philadelphia, while Gonzalez is exactly that. He's a minor leaguer. And Ken Williams has went from getting rid of every minor leaguer that ever came to the system to coming on and trying to stockpile and find that minor leaguers.
That's what's
and,
so...
I just wonder, does Kenny Williams know anything about minor leaguers?
It was an awkward trade to start things off because, like you said, he goes from a manager who doesn't care about minor leaguers looking to dump them very quickly to now he's looking at 2-3 years from now and he's thinking, well, this team's going to get old. I want to get some young guys. And you think they could have got more for Freddy Garcia. And this isn't to say that the White Sox shouldn't have traded Garcia or shouldn't have traded Burley because trading them would have been fine. They just should have gotten more. Also, you can't say that they should have dived into the free agent market because the free agent market was pretty bad. And they probably would have been better off kind of standing pat and letting the season play out itself and then maybe July make a trade. So it was a very awkward trade. And the other trade was Brandon McCarthy, which came out of left field for me. I don't think anybody really expected them to trade Brandon McCarthy unless you were getting somebody who was going to impact the team very, very immediately in 2007. And you didn't get that in John Danks and Massett.
And the third guy.
I don't know. Is he really...
He is legit. He's not a proven prospect by any means, but he's a guy with a lot of raw tools. And overall, though, you look at that Garcia trade, and it was made to open up a spot for Brandon McCarthy.
Yes.
It was made to do that. It was made to give the team some payroll flexibility. However, we then go out and trade Brandon McCarthy for some left-hander that pitched in Double-A and Triple-A, has a poor ERA, Ken Williams already made a major mistake because he could have traded Freddy Garcia for Irvin Santana. So, I just don't understand.
The Angels seem pretty hesitant to deal Santana.
Yeah, but the papers told me he could have made the deal, so obviously Ken Williams could have made the deal. We could have done that. We could have signed Ted Lilly, and we'd be on our way to the World Series, my friends.
Why do you bring up Ted Lilly?
That was a great signing.
How can you bring him? Are you kidding me?
All right, apparently Mario's sarcasm meter has not been
because,
going off.
No, you brought that up before, and I'm thinking he's got to be sarcastic. But now you're going to this rant, and you bring it up again. I'm really starting to think that you think Ted Lilly at 4 years, $40 million was a good deal. But I'm glad that you clarified yourself, and you made the point that you were just joking. Because there was not a pitcher on the free agent market that was worth the money that he got.
The only pitcher that signed actually relatively fair deal
Schmidt?
Considering the circumstances was Jason Schmidt.
Yes.
And I think I said that 3 weeks ago.
Yes,
I said Schmidt was going to sign the most affordable deal because it would be a short-term contract.
Yes.
And you do not give starting pitchers long-term deals. And now to get serious and talk a bit about that Garcia trade the way I really feel about it was we made a brilliant move. Freddy Garcia had 1 year left on his contract, and while I think he will do good, realistically, we still have four proven starters in our rotation. Four. Not many guys have four guys that are going to usually throw right around 200 innings or more, give or take. Mm-hmm. And the average between the four of them, if they're healthy, will be 200 innings. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
Okay.
So we traded Garcia. We got ourselves a guy in Gavin Floyd who was once one of the top 10 prospects in all of baseball. A guy that has a good fastball, a damn good curveball, and his fastball gets great sinking action. Obviously, he's gotten lit up, but he was rushed by the Phillies. They're an organization that hasn't exactly developed a lot of their good prize pitching prospects, and we're going to give him a chance to work with Don Cooper. Don Cooper is a very proven pitching coach in the sense that he's turned around a lot of guys that have million-dollar arms, and no success, minor league success,
yeah.
Basically. And Gavin Floyd had a really bad year last year in the minors. But this guy has, at times, flashed major league success and shown some brilliance, you know, during his career at the major league level and also at the minor league level. And then a guy like Gio Gonzalez, we gave him up for Jim Thome, but this guy has matured. The only question about Gio Gonzalez is his size and his durability that comes with his size. The guy is not that big, but he does get his fastball into the 93-94 mile-an-hour range. He has good motion good movement on the pitches. He has a nice big breaking curveball, and then he throws a changeup, and that's going to be kind of the key to him. If he can stay durable, and if his changeup can continue to improve into being a good pitch, this guy has a chance to be a, you know, number three type starter in our rotation, and he's got a chance to be one of the lefties that replaces Mark Burley. So overall, I can't really complain about the trade. Maybe there was a little bit more value out there,
yes.
But the key is Gavin Floyd. I mean, you got to listen to what Ken Williams has said about this guy. This guy is going to be our fifth starter, barring Hager having a brilliant spring training, or Floyd being hurt, or Floyd really stinking. This guy is going to be the guy that's going to be our fifth guy, and he's going to be replacing McCarthy. But let's be honest here. I was probably as big of a fan of Brandon McCarthy as there, you know, was out here on there, aside from family and you know, all that. And Brandon McCarthy, yeah, he had some great starts. He's proven himself a bit in the major league level, but he's just as unproven as Gavin Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy that struggled out of the bullpen last year, and there's no denying he struggled. Now, whether it was because, you know, he's just not meant to be in the pen, yeah, probably the case. But you know what? Good pitchers get guys out. Bottom line, they get guys out.
Yeah.
And Brandon McCarthy did not do that at the major league level out of the bullpen. So obviously, he's not exactly, you know, money in the bank. No pitcher truly is. Especially a guy that, you know, has had success in 8 or 10 starts, a handful of starts, and then struggled at the bullpen level. So while I like Brandon McCarthy and I think he's going to have a great year, I have no problem swinging a deal when you get a guy like Nick Massett, who's going to come into our bullpen, which is the hardest throwing bullpen in all of baseball. And you get a guy like John Danks, who actually, upside-wise, is a better prospect than Brandon McCarthy. And throws from the left side, and every single time he's made a jump into a new level, John Danks has struggled early, made adjustments, and just absolutely dominated the rest of the way. And the guy's pitched at AAA level. He may get a little bit of a chance in spring training, but I like what the White Sox have done. We have went from being one of the worst farm systems in all of baseball to having practically the best pitching stacked farm system in all of baseball. Our offensive part, you know, tools and prospects, very poor. But you got to like what Ken Williams has done when he's identified this market as absolute shit, garbage, excuse my French and cursing, and he's went out and said, hey, we still have four aces in our hole. Four guys that can be aces in Garland, Vasquez, Contreras, and Burley. And we're going to throw in one of our five guys. One of the guys, we have a lot of top prospects now that we can throw in there, and these guys are going to be able to slowly develop and ease their way into their rotation. And they're going to cost a fraction of what all these other guys are signing. And the White Sox are not going to be tied down to these 6 or 7 year deals, like the absurd deal that Barry Zito got. Realistically, as much as fans don't want to say it, these moves make a lot of sense. A lot of sense. Mario's speechless. I think I really pulled him over and he thought, yeah, I absolutely hated those moves.
No. I think I'm very, very taken back by what you said from the beginning to now. I still think they could have gotten more for Freddy Garcia. I think the trade was you trade a guy who you know what he's going to do for two guys who you don't know what they're going to do. They could have gotten more for Freddy Garcia, although I kind of understand the philosophy in that. The Brandon McCarthy trade, when I look at it, it was out of left field for the simple fact is that you hype up Brandon McCarthy for such a long time. You make such a big deal about having a six starter, about how he's going to enter that rotation in 2007, and then you trade him away. That said, when you look at that deal and when you look at that, you get two young pitchers who are just as talented as Brandon McCarthy, and perhaps even better than one of them in John Danks, that deal does make sense. And I do like that deal. They could have gotten more from Freddy Garcia, but when you're looking at a Gavin Floyd, the deal could work out to be very, very a very good deal in the future. Here's the thing, though, and it goes back to what I said in the beginning. Kenny Williams is a very aggressive GM, and he went from a GM who always looked at now and what are we going to do now to a GM looking 2-3 years down the line. And I think it surprises a lot of people. And I think when people really look at the talent the Sox have on paper and the arms that they have on their pitching staff in the minors and at the major league level, I think you could be somewhat confident in their future. But it was still just an awkward approach by Kenny Williams and a very bizarre one and just something that's not like him.
It's definitely a risky move. But Ken Williams is 100% right when he said, and he said this today on an interview with Mike North, who I think is the biggest jag bag in all Chicago, by the way, Chicago radio at least. But the fact of the line was it was a very good interview. Ken Williams talked a lot about, you know, the deals. And the reality was if Ken Williams does not make those trades, the White Sox are not going to re-sign all those guys, and our team is going to lose 100 games for a long time because our farm system had absolutely no chance of coming in and replacing these guys. And it really still doesn't, because somewhere down the road, we are going to have to bring back some of our starters. We cannot put in five new starters in a two-year period realistically say you're going to win.
No.
Because you got to remember, from the business standpoint of things, these deals look bad because the White Sox are coming off record attendance, and they're basically saying, we're not going to spend the money. Now, they're right in not spending the money because these contracts are absolutely absurd. But somewhere down the road, you're going to have to give some of these guys, you're going to have to bring some of these guys back.
Yeah.
And that's why trading Javier Vasquez, trading John Garland, and trading Jose Contreras, who has a no-trade clause for the year, do not make sense because we have at least one more year out of all of those guys.
No, there's no those three guys you definitely have to keep. Mark Burley, it's kind of unknown right now, although you should probably keep him considering that fifth spot. I know you said Gavin Floyd is a fifth starter, but I think that's it's going to be very, very wide open. Now, this Sox team, what Kenny Williams did is they're going to be a good team next year. By trading Garcia and by getting rid of McCarthy, they're still going to be a good team this year. With all the young question marks that they have, they're still going to be a good team next year. The difference is are they a World Series team? And it's a possibility with all the talent that they have. And like you said now, 2-3 years down the road, you could look at the Sox, and they have a better chance 2-3 years down the road of being a good team than they did at the start of this offseason. Because when you look at this team at the start of this offseason, and Kenny Williams made the point, in a couple years, this team was going to be old, and eventually you would have to rebuild from scratch unless you would want to follow this market and jump up your payroll to $150, $160 million, which, if they were to do that, the Sox would probably have lost me as a fan. But I'm actually glad that Kenny Williams has looked to the future a little bit, and they still have a pretty good team for 2007. But let's look at 2007. Let's go into the rotation. John Garland is obviously... He's staying. Vasquez is obviously staying. Contreras is obviously staying, but that's kind of where I want to start off with, is Jose Contreras. I have some doubts with him next year from a health standpoint.
Probably the one guy I would like to trade, because I think we could get a lot of value for a guy, even though he was hurt a bit last season because of his stuff and the fact that he signed pretty affordably. I think he's a guy we could move. Unfortunately, he has a no-trade clause. He's really happy in Chicago. And in all honesty, when he is healthy, the guy is one of the best pitchers in baseball. And you got to like having that, and it's going to be something the White Sox are going to need to rely on. They're going to have to rely on these aces, so to speak, to pick up the slack for what could be some ups and downs when it comes to their fifth starter spot and the bullpen. I know a lot of people have talked a lot about the improvements to our bullpen, and yes, stuff-wise, we probably have one of the three or four best bullpens in all of baseball. But the reality is, just because you have the stuff, just because you have the arms, does not mean you get the production.
There are going to be instances with that bullpen where they're going to come in and they're going to walk 2-3 guys in a row. And there's going to be times with that bullpen where they're going to have 2-3-4 game stretches where they're not going to be – they can't really be relied upon. However, with that is going to come the possibility of you having one of the deepest and most powerful bullpens in the major leagues. But their control is going to be a problem, and I'd like to have one or two guys in that bullpen – who were just soft tossers, guys who could go in there, throw strikes, pitch, and not just try to blow people away. Because after a while, you think if you have 5-6 guys coming out of the bullpen who are throwing 93-94, and if that's what they're relying upon, granted, a lot of these guys have good breaking balls, you would kind of see the bullpen being fairly easy to read each and every single game.
I think the key is, though, you're going to have starting pitchers like Mark Burley, John Garland, the two of them that are not overpowering, so to speak.
Yes.
And that's even a guy like Gavin Floyd, who's got the stuff to be a little bit more overpowering. But you have different guys. You're going to be showing a lot of different looks. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember, these guys we're getting also have pretty good secondary pitches.
I know.
They're not just going to be sitting on fastballs. And we're not talking 93, 94. Mm. With our bullpen, we're talking 96, 97 out of pretty much every single guy in that pen.
Well,
Thordy, Jenks, McDougal. Arzma throws in the 95.
The fear is you look at a guy like Bobby Jenks and even Thornton for good examples. If they don't have their breaking stuff, they're going to rely purely on the fastball. I just hope that there's not a period where you're going to have a couple guys in that bullpen who aren't going to have their secondary stuff and they're going to be relying purely on fastballs. It could be a little easier for the opposing team to hit, knowing that that's what we're facing each and every guy to the bullpen. That said, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the biggest problem for the bullpen is going to be control. And I think if all those the 5-6 guys who are in the bullpen, if they learn how to get under control and throw more strikes, I think they'll be effective. I don't think the whole having too many fastball pitchers is going to be a problem. But my concern is going to be, are they going to be able to throw strikes consistently?
And there's no doubt, Don Cooper is going to have his toughest job.
Oh, God.
Because he's going to have to sculpt and mold a lot of really talented pitchers that have had ups and downs.
And what if he does?
Most of these guys have had success.
And what if he does?
If he does, I think you now talk to him in the same breath of Leo Mazzoni, formerly of the Braves.
You'd have to.
And you have to. Because think of all the guys we've gotten that he's turned around to a point. And you got to respect that. And what Don Cooper does, he doesn't teach. Usually, guys lose velocity with Don Cooper. They don't throw quite as hard. Their confidence and gets them to throw quick, and it's all about tempo and strikes and pretty much a mindset.
Yeah.
Where you're going to go and you're going to attack the hitter.
When you
and
look,
that's his theory.
When you look at the pitching staff right now, obviously, I think John Garland was evolving as he's pitching the league, and Mark Burley has been a pitcher for a while. But when you look at everybody else, you look at Javier Vasquez, who came in last year, and Cooper had to work with him a little bit. You look at Contreras, who Cooper had to work with him a little bit. Then you look at all those guys in the bullpen, even guys like Jenks and Thornton. Cooper has had an impact or will have an impact on probably 9-10 guys in the staff.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And you also have guys like, I mean, obviously you're going to have Gavin Floyd. You're going to have John Danks. You're talking Nick Massett now. There's going to be a lot of guys that he's going to be working with. Cisco is going to be a major project because the guy has, you know, the ability to be, you know, one of the better young left-handed pitchers in all of baseball. But he's got a major question marks. And most of these guys, I got to remind people, there are a lot of major question marks about the Chicago White Sox, about the 2007 Chicago White Sox.
Well, the belief is if you have 4 or 5 guys who all have great stuff, if 1-2 of them pan out, that's really all you could expect. Now, of course, at the same time, all 5 of them could just continue to struggle as they've been, and the Sox could be set back even longer. Let's go into the bullpen. You're going to have Bobby Jenks. Matt Thornton's probably your number 2. McDougal, who is signed to, I believe, what was it, a 3-year extension?
He's signed. Pretty much our entire bullpen is going to be cheap until 2011.
Yes.
So you got to think of that as Ken Williams, as you built this bullpen. It could be a dominant bullpen for the next 4 or 5 years. And in this day and age, it ain't the starting rotation, my friends. It's the bullpen and the offense that typically lead to the playoffs. And you can look at that. You can look at teams with the best bullpens in baseball, and they win. And they do a damn good job.
As long as you have a rotation that could eat up some innings, and the Sox do have
decent.
That.
Because bullpens are where the difference is. Late in ball games, there's a huge difference if you have a shutdown bullpen as opposed to a bullpen that gives up leads. Because if you have a great bullpen, not only will you hold games that you lead, you also come back from a whole lot of games, and you will win games you shouldn't have. And last year, the Chicago White Sox did not do a good job of that. Their bullpen did not close out as many games as they could have, and their bullpen was not terrible. But it wasn't near as good as a lot of us expected it to be.
I think when they traded Marte and they traded Vizcaino, and then obviously Hernandez was gone, it lost a lot of the depth in the bullpen. They lost a lot of depth last year, and they were relying on guys like Cliff Polite and Neil Kotz to repeat what they've done after having worked tremendously in 2005. So I really fault Kenny Williams for last year because I think he should have looked at the bullpen and realized that there might have been some drop-off from Polite and Kotz and that they needed some more depth, and they kind of weakened that, which I wasn't too pleased with. Let's stick with the bullpen, though. You look at Jenks, you look at McDougal, you have Matt Thornton. You have the other three spots now open in the bullpen. Where do those spots go to?
Arzma. Probably Andy Cisco, depending. And Nick Massett.
Well, do you think Gavin Floyd might have a possibility there? Let's say
come spring training. I think Gavin Floyd is starting, either whether it's in AAA or the major league level.
Okay.
I think Charlie Hager is starting, whether it's in AAA or the major league level. John Danks would be starting, whether it's AAA or the major league level. The only question mark is you may flip Andy Cisco with Boone Logan. I think that would be a big-time battle right there.
Yeah. I would actually really like to see if there's one pitcher as far as that five spot to take it. I would really like to see Charles Hager kind of actually master the knuckleball a little bit, and he could go into that rotation, because it would be, first of all, I like watching a knuckleball. Second of all, it would be nice to see a guy throwing 60 miles an hour and then follow that up with a guy like Bobby Jenks or Matt Thornton or, you know, a Mike McDougal coming out of the bullpen throwing 95.
You got to remember, what makes Hager special is the fact that he can throw a fastball in the mid to low 80s, or yes, the mid to upper 80s.
Yes.
And not many knuckleballers can do that.
No.
Now, it's still a big question mark, and you got to remember also that our catchers – we've never really caught knuckleball pitchers, so you got an issue with that. That's why I think Floyd is probably the front runner, the major front runner for that job. But what I want to talk a little bit about is the future of these moves, because personally speaking, Mark Burley should be traded. If there was any starter we should trade, it is Mark Burley. Because Mark Burley, after Barry Zito signed, any intents and purposes of the Chicago White Sox signing Mark Burley to a contract, the only way we will sign him to a contract is if he has another terrible season and he just signs for dirt cheap for the innings. As an inning eater.
But would you want to sign him after another terrible season?
Because
at that point, you really have to start thinking, you know what, maybe he's just one of those lefties who, that's it. You know, he really wore himself out early in his career, and now it's starting to affect him for maybe the remainder of his career. So if he has a bad season, I don't think you sign him. I think it's something where they have to try to work out a deal, and really, if they trade him, I really wouldn't mind that at all. And I think they might actually be able to get something for him.
Well, I think when it comes to Mark Burley, you either say, we'll take the draft picks, we'll see what happens in July, or you blow us away on an offer now. This is a time where Ken Williams, just like he did with the Brandon McCarthy deal in a sense, lets another team wow him. The Freddie Garcia deal, he kind of wanted to make a deal, and I think we got even value, so to speak. Maybe we could have got a little bit more, but overall, we got two guys that I think can make an impact on the Sox for a number of years, if things pan out.
Possibly, yeah.
And that's a big question mark still.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Brandon McCarthy deal, I think we got wowed because we got three guys as opposed to one, so to speak. And that's a positive because I think the one guy we gave up, we got a guy back that's an equal-level prospect. But obviously, it's a little bit more risk because he hasn't had any major league success.
Mm-hmm.
But we also got two other good arms, one of which is already going to help us in 2007.
Whenever you get a left-handed prospect who – obviously, I've never seen John Danks before. I can't really go out there and compare him visually to Brandon McCarthy, but – it looks like they're almost on the same level, considering John Danks is a lefty. And if from the numbers, it seems like he's always made that adjustment going from level to level. So it seems like you're actually getting a smart pitcher in John Danks, which was the same for Brandon McCarthy.
Yeah, and the nice part about John Danks is this is a guy that the Rangers have been very careful with in his development, so he hasn't like overpitched. He's had a very steady maturation process. And they've actually kind of forced him not to use his curveball, which is his best pitch, in order to develop his secondary pitches better.
And that's
going to help him in the long term. And his curveball is really good, and he has two variations of it. And he's been very careful of not throwing one of those variations as they're just kind of easing his arm and his development. And I think we're going to see a guy that's going to be on the south side for a very long time, and he's going to be a big fan favorite. And he may be the guy replacing Mark Burley. However, Mark Burley, when I talk trade with him, I think the Mets are the perfect fit. The Mets are a team that could be willing to give him the contract he wants. Because let's be honest, Mark Burley will not sign a contract less than 7 years, $15 million a year. With what Barry Zito got, I don't care. As long as Burley has a 4.5 ERA or less, he will get that kind of market, get that kind of contract. And there is no way the White Sox will or should give any pitcher a 7-year deal. I don't care if your name is Johan Santana. You do not give starting pitching 7-year deals.
No.
I understand position players, but you give out a 7-year contract, I want you to tell me one pitcher where a 7-year contract would have actually paid off that's been given out.
It has
long term contracts with pitchers fail.
It has to be a very, very, very good deal in terms of giving a guy 7 years and having maybe an $8 million a year salary where you say, you know what, we'll take the chance because the money we're paying him on a yearly basis is so low. But otherwise, no, it's way too risky. I think once you start going over four, I think you're taking some chances with certain pitchers, obviously. In Mark Burley's case, I think you could probably go pending
how – I think
you
could go four
pending,
or five considering Burley's history.
Pending how he reacts this year, if he comes back and starts throwing strong again, now you're looking at a pitcher who's going to give you 200 innings. He's a lefty. And not only just 200 innings, he's going to give you six, 7 innings a start. So giving him 5, 6 years – you don't necessarily mind knowing that he's a lefty. He's a soft tosser. He's not going to blow you away. So you could kind of maybe look at it. Maybe he could kind of do what Jamie Moyer did, or at least get close to it and be a very effective pitcher for a long time.
Yeah, the problem is when you get that 7 years, it's a mistake. And that's why I think if Ken Williams can get an offer that involves, you know, Mike Pelfrey or Lasings Millage, which are two upper echelon prospects, then you think long and hard about doing that type of deal.
Now,
however,
where do the Sox then look for 2007? If let's say they were to make that trade, let's say the Mets do come up with Pelfrey and Millage, and they want to make that trade for Burley. Now you're looking at a situation where you might have a John Daines.
You have two new
Yeah, so, and it's nothing wrong with that. It's nothing wrong with it to develop. But when you have three guys in your rotation above them who are making a combined, what, maybe $30 million, when you look at that offense and have a bunch of guys who are making, well, not a bunch of guys, but you have Tomey and Canerica who are making, you know, close to $10 million or more than, or maybe $20 million combined. You still have a lot of money invested into that team. Do you want to take that chance and weaken your rotation and really set yourself back considering how much money you're giving to everybody else?
I think the key is if you make that move and you have confidence, and Ken Williams has a lot of confidence in scouts and baseball people, and I agree with that more so than the scouting, statistical approach that some organizations go with, then I think what Ken Williams would have to do is give up some prospects. I'm not saying the top guys like Pelfrey, Danks, Gio, but maybe guys like Kyle McCulloch, Adam Russell. See what you can do and take on money, because you know what? With the Sox making those moves and getting these young arms, they're going to be able to spend a lot of money on their offense. And that's not a bad idea in this market, because you're better off and you have a better bet for long-term success giving hitters longer-term deals than you would pitchers.
Well, there's really nobody left in the market right now. Are you talking about next year?
Well, I'm talking about one name, Manny Ramirez. Because I think if you have two young pitchers, you should have the approach of out-hitting and out-mashing until your young guys can develop, and basically buy him time for that season to get, you know, get comfortable and pitch.
Why do you got
to
go down that road?
You know I love Manny, and the White Sox would easily be able to take on his contract, and it's
a
bargain in this state.
I think Manny Ramirez is he's my favorite offensive player to watch. I love watching him hit. I think he's the best run producer in the game, and I think he's so talented and he's so smart, but. Man, I don't like him. I don't like his character. I don't like him as a player. And outside of his natural abilities and what he produces, I really don't care for him as a player. And I think if you were to, let's say, acquire him, and obviously you would put him in left field, the lineup would be very scary. I mean, you're talking about having Ramirez and Canerico and Tomey and Dye and Creedy and Pruszynski and Aguchi. I mean, you're talking about having one unbelievable lineup. But, God, it would be way too close to a Yankee lineup, and I just don't know if that would really help the Sox in the long run. By long run, I mean World Series.
Well, see, my theory is to get to the World Series, you have to get to the playoffs, and those guys buy the time for the starting rotation to do it. And you got to remember, in the playoffs, you only need four starters. At times, only three starters in a five-game series. And you'd still have John Garland, Javier Vasquez, and Jose Contreras. And if those guys are pitching well, I'll take those three against pretty much any three in baseball.
Well, if John Garland develops, which I think is still possible, I still think that there's room to grow with Garland as far as – because I think for many years he was very consistent but average, and then last past couple of years he's been either very good or mediocre, it seems, at times. If you can kind of find that consistency of being a very good pitcher, and you have Contreras who has a lot of talent and Vasquez has a lot of talent, there's a possibility, yes, the Sox could go out there, stock up on the offense, go to the playoffs, and then have three very good pitchers and a very deep, powerful bullpen, and they might be able to do something special. But, man, I don't know if
Plus,
I really care.
You got to remember with Ken Williams, that we would have unbelievable amount of pitching prospects and highly thought of ones
for the trade deadline.
Exactly. And we even after making trades, we'd still have a nice, good group of chips.
And then they could trade. They could trade for Yoan Santana right before the playoffs.
If we wanted to, we could. But I just like to point out that I realistically, I think it'd be a big mistake not to trade Mark Burley. I really do. I know we probably should get use out of him this year and let him walk for the draft picks.
What about during the season?
I think it's hard to make any trade during the season if you're in competition. Because I think the best thing you can do with Burley, if you're making the deal in July and you're a competitor, you're not giving up one of your best pitchers. Bottom line, you're just not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're in a tough predicament there. And I think the best thing you can do is you could trade him now, and you can find a guy like Jeff Weaver or some type of starter that has 1 year left on his deal of a team that's maybe not competing.
No.
You get him in there to be an innings eater as your fourth starter, and then your young guy's the fifth starter. Mario is dying because I mentioned the name of Jeff Weaver.
No. What, for a one-year deal? Would it be a one-year deal?
Yes, that's what I said.
How much? How much? How much?
$10 million. I don't care.
Why do you make things so difficult? No, I don't know who they would sign, but I'd rather just develop two young guys. I think I've developed too much of a dislike for Weaver to actually agree with even a 1 year deal. So let's go to the offense though. And let's go to Toby Hall. And I knew you were talking about catchers, and I kind of wanted to bring it up earlier, but Toby Hall was signed. And I was kind of thinking maybe it was going to be time for Chris Stewart to kind of come to the major league level and serve as A.J. Brzezinski's backup. But when you get a guy like Toby Hall, who was a starter for the Devil Rays for a couple of years and really is a good offensive player considering he's going to be a backup for the Sox, that might have been probably their best – actually, I think it was their only signing of this offseason.
Yeah, and it was a good offseason, or a good signing,
good signing,
I should say. I mean, that was a very good signing because he hits left-handed pitchers, and he's going to be able to spell up Pierzynski, and he's a good defensive catcher. So there's no way that I could slam that move. I think it was one of the better moves that Ken Williams made, and it made a lot of sense. Kind of like 2 years ago, the signing of Pierzynski, of Iguchi and company. The one question mark with our offense is a lot like our pitching staff. We have a lot of guys due to become free agents, and Ken Williams is going to have to be creative. He's going to have to think of who he likes and who he's going to keep. Konerko is the mainstay in this lineup. But then you have a question of Jim Thome. How long is he going to hold up? You have Jermaine Dye, who I love Jermaine Dye. He is such a solid all-around ball player. But this guy, if he duplicates next season, is going to get a monster deal. Now, he may be the type of guy, though, that will take a lot of money but do it over a three-year span. Because Jermaine Dye is, you know, really a class act. He's a little bit older.
He would not.
Teams may still have concerns.
Yeah, he should not get any after next season. If he goes out, even if he doesn't even duplicate it, if he goes at his 30 home runs and have 100 RBIs, he's not worth more than 3 years. I think he's going to be at that age where it's 2-3 year deal for him. And maybe that's what the Sox may want to do is say, you know, we'll give you a 2 year deal for a lot of money and kind of, you know, make it easier for them 3 years down the road, of course.
Because this team could look really bad in 08 still if they don't find a way because their outfield is absolutely atrocious.
Well, maybe
Scott Pesenik, Brian Anderson, and Jermaine Dye, as great as Jermaine Dye is, that is a terrible outfield unless you make some big improvements. And Pesenik is capable of being a better ball player. Brian Anderson is capable of being a better ball player. But at the same time, if Jermaine Dye walks in a year, we are absolutely screwed. And Ken Williams better have some eyes, some names, maybe some free agents that he personally wants to go out and get to upgrade that offense a year from now.
The good thing is when you're talking about position players and you're talking about offenses, it's a lot easier to go into the free agent market, and it's a lot more understandable to dump money at these position players. So I think you could always build an offense through free agency. So I don't think that would be a problem. The thing is you wonder if there's going to come a time when the Sox maybe should think about rebuilding. Even though they're stocking up at some young pitchers, you wonder if there's going to be time from a position player standpoint where they say, you know what, we're not going to sign Jermaine Dye. We're going to somehow make a trade for a young player or develop our own guys, which they really don't have many of from an outfield standpoint, or at least from, I think, in general, from a position player standpoint. You kind of wonder if that's maybe is something that's eventually going to have to happen. Because when you look, you have Jim Thome, who doesn't have much left. A.J. Brzezinski is going to be a free agent. You kind of wonder where they're going to go with him. Tadayu Taguchi is 32 years old. Joe Creede obviously has the back problems, and it seems like he's gone. So they're going to have a lot of spots opening up. You wonder if they're going to try to go out there and try to solve 5, 6 positions in a matter of an offseason, or they just decide, you know what, let's rebuild.
I can't see Ken Williams going through the rebuilding mode, and I don't ever think teams need to rebuild. I think if teams are smart, they can develop a couple guys a year and go from there. So honestly speaking, I think Ken Williams still has a lot of potential moves he may make, and it's going to be not only interesting, I think that we have a few more moves up the sleeve this year that may get us some guys that are going to help us now and in the future, offensively speaking. And I think next offseason is going to be even more crazy because the White Sox will probably have some money to spend.
Yeah, the next offseason will probably be a little bit more hectic. And I think I said this before. I would have really liked to see them trade Jim Thome, although there was probably not a lot of teams that he would have fit with. I would have loved to see them dump him because I just don't see him doing what he did last season, especially how he was at the end of the season. He was seemed like little nagging injuries, and I could honestly see Jim Thome playing 40, 50 games, and he's out for a significant amount of time. Are the Sox going to be put in a situation where Mikoviak is going to be kind of used as a DH or Josh Fields is going to be kind of used? What exactly happens with that bench, especially with Ross Glowe now obviously being traded for Cisco?
Well, it definitely sounds like when it comes to Thome getting spelled, it's going to be a lot of Toby Hall, and it's going to be against left-handed pitching, and Toby Hall hits left-handed pitching because we still don't have any other guys. So that means Pierzynski may still occasionally play against left-handers. So it'll be kind of interesting.
Well, that's always risky because now you open up a hole on the bench with the catcher. Especially with Pierzynski not being very fleet of foot, you might want to have a pinch runner late in the game, and you might not be able to do that because you have no other options.
It's true, but we still got to remember you got Pablo, and Ozzy's willing to play whoever is possible. Well, Speaking of which, Neil Kotz has signed a one-year deal with the Cubs for $825,000.
I think double what he made last year. I think he made around $400,000 last year, so he got double for actually having a worse season. But I think that's a very fair deal for him because I think he has a capability of maybe not being the pitcher of 2005, but being pretty damn close to it. Now, let's not get into the Cubs. Sticking with the Sox, you're going to have Iguchi at second base. Joe Creedy, I think, there's a question mark with him revolving around his back. You kind of wonder if Josh Fields is going to find himself at the major on the roster to start the season, although it's probably more likely Mikoviak would actually play third base more like he was supposed to this past season. Where do you think Creedy goes this year is from a back injury standpoint?
I would like to see it. I think the perfect scenario is this. Joe Creedy shows himself early on in the season that he's going to even be better than he was last year, and he's going to continue to develop. The White Sox decide that we're going to give Joe Creedy the money, we're going to let Jermaine Dye walk, and let Joe Creedy kind of swing up a spot, and then try to find a middle-price free agent that will replace Jermaine Dye later on, and hope that Brian Anderson improves, and that you can get Sweeney and Fields at bats, and get them a feel to see who's going to take over in left field.
That doesn't even seem like that door is even going to be attempted to be open, though. It seems like Joe Creedy is going to be gone, and I think that's kind of it. I don't think there's really any other way.
Well, as long as he has a good season, there's going to be a ton of suitors for Creedy, and Ken Williams can always move him next year. So it's not like they're forced to do anything right now.
Well, rounding up to position players, Scott Pitstanek looks like he is going to be playing left field, although I hope that there's going to be a little bit more use of a guy like Ozuna or even some young guys, and they're not going to give him as much time as they did last year. While I don't think Pitstanek was the big problem that a lot of people believe he was last year, I do think he did struggle, and I think there has to come a point this year where they don't give him 2-3 months. If he starts off batting 150 or 190, they got to be quick to pull the plug on him, and that could be kind of ugly because if Pitsenik doesn't really go back to what he did in 2005, you're going to have left field and potentially center field two very big holes in both of those spots.
Definitely. It's going to be key to see this offense and see guys like Uribe, Anderson, and Pitsenik all have better seasons than they should. Dye will probably have a drop-off. Konerko's pretty steady. Jim Thome, he probably will be pretty similar to what he did last year. Maybe a little bit of a drop-off, but hopefully a bit more consistent and full season. Gucci should be similar. Creedy could get a little bit better. I think the offense is actually going to be fine. I'm not too concerned with it. The big thing is just, buying time and getting the pitching staff to turn around. And maybe Ken Williams can hope that he can get a couple of his starters signed a long time, and then we only need to be bringing in a couple of starters because we can't expect all these young pitchers to develop.
Well, it's going to be hard to make those signings. I mean, Jose Contreras, I don't think there's really a way you give him a 3-4 year deal. I think you have to kind of assume that he's probably in his late 30s. You don't want to take that chance, I don't think. And Avi Vasquez, a lot of people have been down that road before where, you know, he gets a 4 or 5 year deal and he doesn't really pan out. I mean, really, the only guy in this rotation that I honestly would like to see the Sox keep long term, it's John Garland.
Yeah.
Now, Vasquez, is Vasquez and Contreras, they're a free agent the same year?
Yeah, all three of them.
See, that's. You kind of wished that those contracts were offset a little bit, because I wouldn't mind seeing Vasquez walk 1 year and then Contreras walk the year after. I would not mind seeing that at all. I hope the Sox don't feel that they're going to be put in a position where they have to sign one of them, because I think I think long term, I think both of those guys have to be gone, and I think John Garland has to be in their rotation with maybe some free agents or some guys you're obviously developing, whether it's Danks or a Floyd or a Hager or whoever.
Yeah, I think the key is obviously if we make any more trades, we should probably not be looking as much at getting prospects back, but getting starting pitchers that are good, that should get better, that will be with the organization for, you know, a few years, guys like Irvin Santana. And obviously those type of guys don't grow on trees, and organizations aren't really going to be too willing to give them up. But it comes to a point where you're going to want to say, hey, we have three starters, four starters that are going to eventually, you know, Burley's probably gone in the off at the end of the season, then three more are going to finish up that following year. So you're going to try to get, you know, two young guys that are going to develop and be ready to take over this year and next year, and then see after that if you can kind of move a guy like Contreras or Vasquez or even Garland and get a proven guy, and then also make a trade and try to get a guy that's signed or is not going to be eligible for too long and give up a couple of our prospects that maybe we don't like as much.
It's gonna be freaking crazy next offseason, the next two offseasons. It's going to be interesting because, like I said before, I can honestly see the Sox being put in a situation where they have no chance. They have no other way to go about it than to rebuild. The positive thing in that, though, is that they have so many young guys where they might just have to rebuild in the terms of having a couple guys, maybe a couple starters, a couple guys in the pen, a couple position players, and meanwhile, while those guys are rebuilding, you have guys like John Danks or whatever in the rotation, maybe already have some experience and some time under their belt. So,
plus, you got to remember, there really is always free agency and other things, because as those three guys walk or four guys walk, you're talking about $48, $50 million per season coming off your books. Because right now, I think our rotation makes about $43 million. The four guys.
I think it was close to or over 50 last year with Garcia.
Yeah, and now it's going to be in the 40s because Burley gets like $12 million or something like that. So when you think about that, even if four guys walk, you could still realistically throw $25 million towards two guys, even if it's not maybe the best. Maybe one guy
and
gets
still
15,
and still have about $25-30 million left to spend.
Yeah.
That's if their intentions are to
remember,
keep.
There's a lot of different things.
That's if their intentions are to keep the payroll around $90 to $110 million.
And I think that's the plan. The key is they're going to have to win, because otherwise the attendance is just going to crash.
Yeah.
And then the Sox are screwed. So Ken Williams better be banking, and these guys better pay off, because he is making a risky move. And I think that's kind of how we have to finish this show off for the day, is the fact that these moves make a lot of sense.
Not PR.
There's no doubt they're risky.
They're not good PR moves, and they are risky from a long-term standpoint.
Yeah. And the only way these moves will pay off is if they do pay off, because if the Sox had just held pat, they still would have drawn a huge amount of people, and they would still have an expensive payroll, and I think fans wouldn't have been able to play the cheap card. But now, if the Sox do struggle, you're going to have a lot of people complaining about cheapness.
They've already done
and
it.
You're going to see a big, yeah.
It's already
and so
happened.
If they don't actually pay off and pay off quickly, we could see a lot of negative backlash. And
you're going to see that. If Creedy walks, you're going to see that. If Dye walks, you're going to see that. Trading Burley, even if they get a Pelfrey and a mileage, you're going to have fans saying, look at that, they're going cheap again. Nothing you could do. I think that's going to happen no matter what. The Sox could go out there and they spend 100. You look at on the north side, the Cubs spend $100 million, and there's still people who talk about them being cheap. They're not being cheap. They're just stupid. There's a difference, and hopefully it doesn't get to that point. But
I will say this: I'm very confident with Ken Williams. I think he's proven himself many times
because he's confident in himself.
Yeah, he doesn't think about what the fans think, and realistically, you can't think what the fans think, because most fans are trivial. And whether you like it or not, I think obviously most people who listen to the show are pretty educated. They follow up on things. And I'm not saying you have to agree with these movies because everyone is entitled to their opinion. And there's not a chance that I'm right 100% of the time. I've proven that on the show numerous times, and I'm not right all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mario's proven that he's not right.
Yes.
Although I'd like to say that I think I'm right every goddamn time. I'm a cocky, arrogant prick.
At the time. At the time you feel you will be right.
And Ken Williams has a lot of faith. He trusts his baseball guys. He's proven himself to be a pretty good guy when it comes to trading for different players, like especially his small trades he makes, like where he gets a Juan Uribe or he claims a guy like Bobby Jenks off waivers. Those are the deals he's really, really good at. And when he trades for Damaso Marte and acquires Marte originally. And I'm thinking that Cisco deal may be another one of those type of moves. So he's usually good at that those type of things. The Matt Thornton trade, obviously, for Borchard.
And that's where you have to be very confident with him regarding the scouting report. Because when you're making trades for guys like Marte and guys like Cisco, it's not looking at the numbers. You're looking at the scouting report. So it's the same when you look at a guy like Thornton, you look at the scouting report. So if a guy like Thornton, you acquire him and he actually pitches well, then you have to be even more confident with guys like Danks.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. And the bottom line is, when Ken Williams makes trades, the reason I'm a big fan of him as a GM is you can always see why he makes the trades. The only possible exception was that Javier Vasquez deal where there was a little bit of question because I think a lot of people thought we're still going to be fine in our rotation. But his logic was these guys, these starting pitchers, are going to wear down. And because of that, because of the postseason, and because of that, he wanted to have that extra guy because he figured someone was bound to get
well,
hurt. There was going to be fullbacks. And he was right.
Well, the problem was him and Keane went on the same page. If him and Keane went on the same page regarding McCarthy being the sixth starter and McCarthy entering that rotation when they needed it, McCarthy would have been in the rotation halfway through last year. But they weren't on the same page. Guillen wanted to stick with the five guys through the whole season. Kenny Williams really didn't plan for that to happen.
Yeah, Garcia probably would have been moved by the trade deadline and McCarthy would have been in the rotation. That's probably what would have happened had Williams gotten his way.
Yeah.
And John Danks probably would never have been here because I think Brandon McCarthy probably would have had some success and would have shown enough the Sox would have been happy to keep him.
I believe he used the word Kenny Williams used the word serviceable. In the interview today with the score, I didn't hear it, but he used the word serviceable for McCarthy.
Yeah, he thinks McCarthy will be a serviceable starter for a long time.
That's different than saying very good.
Yeah.
It seems like there is some
doubt.
However,
I know deep down that as a GM that trades a guy, you're going to have to give some spin. And Ken Williams many a times has said that he is a big fan of Brandon McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think McCarthy has earned his spot as a top prospect. He's a very sharp individual, and I wish him personally nothing but the best. He's done some good things for our site. He's done interviews with us. So, I appreciate it. And I will constantly cheer him on because I think he is a consummate professional. He says a lot of the right things. And, yeah, he did say he wanted to start. You know what? I don't have a problem with a guy that wants to do something, that wants to go out and make himself better. As long as that's the case and you're trying to win and you're trying to make yourself better, fine by me. He's saying these things in the off season, and that's when it's the right time. It's not like he's sitting out there saying, I'm not going to pitch in the rotation. I'm only going to do this. I'm only going to do that. Or I'm not going to pitch in the bullpen. He said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to help the team win. Obviously, his ultimate goal is to be a starting pitcher. But you know what? You're going to do whatever it takes to win. And he's always said he was willing to do that. So I have absolutely zero problems. The only problems I've ever had was with the way Ozzie Guillen has handled him and the way Ozzie Guillen's handled many a young player. And that's going to be interesting to see how he handles some of our young guys.
Yeah.
We have a young bullpen.
Yes.
And we're going to have some young starters. And that could just be funny to watch. This could be an explosion with Guillen.
You know what? I think if you were to tell me that Guillen's going to be gone in a year, I could see it happening. Maybe not being fired, but I could see if this season doesn't go very well, considering there are more young guys into this team, I could see Guillen stepping down and being forced to step down. Not stepping down on his own, but the White Sox telling him to step down.
Yeah, I don't think Guillen will be fired, but I think it'll be exactly that. It could be a resignation, and it could be Razor Shines taking over. Because Shines is the type of guy that I want when it comes to young players, because he gets the young players and he makes them better.
And that's a time where you really see the Sox rebuilding full force, especially if the division comes to the point where teams like the Tigers and the Twins and the Indians even, who knows how they're going to pan out this year, but if those two teams show that they're going to be pretty good for the next couple of years, maybe might not be a bad idea for the Sox to take a step back for a couple of years, wait for those teams to settle down, and then explode again.
Those words will not happen with Ken Williams as GM. I can guarantee you one thing. He does not believe in rebuilding. He believes in retooling, and continuously winning. He goes with that John Schuerholz style and philosophy, and it worked for the Braves for a long time. And Ken Williams is going to do all he can to make the White Sox a consistent winner. And he's done that. They've been a consistent winner. However, they have obviously struggled getting into the playoffs. But the one time they did get in the playoffs with Williams, they did make, you know, some big noise.
There's that time where you might not have a choice. And I hope that if that time's there, that Williams doesn't try to force something and try to force to put a good team together and you just have mediocrity. Because I think that's the last thing. You don't want to have a string of 6-7 years where they're winning 83, 84 games. So if they have to take a step back for a couple of years to rebuild, I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all.
It's all about being smart because you know what? If you look at teams that rebuild, most teams that rebuild are continuously rebuilding.
I'm not talking about rebuilding totally. I'm not saying that. You're obviously going to have talent and you want to be competitive. I'm saying is don't try to force things and try to just stack up your team every single year trying to continually be competitive, and then before you know it, you're never there, because I think there has to be some development involved in order for you to become a world championship team.
Bottom line, rebuilding is what losers do. I'm sorry, but it is.
I'm not saying rebuilding. I'm saying it's in between rebuilding and retooling. It's in between that, if that's possible.
I don't think it is possible, personally speaking.
Well, let's make that possible. Let's sign a word between retooling and rebuilding, and that's what they will be doing.
Fucking up?
Fucking up? Is that what it's called? Fucking up? We're going to fuck up for a couple of years.
That's what I'm going to go with.
They're going to fuck up. So they got a couple more years before they fuck up, so...
Yeah. I cursed a couple of times. It was an interesting show. Mario didn't curse. We had about 10 minutes of sarcasm pulling over his head.
The show on my end was a big fuck-up, though. You did very well, but I was just fucking up the whole time.
What's new? I carry the show.
No, you did carry the show this week, because I wasn't really into it. You had so much energy going in. I think when you went into that 17-minute rant, that just kind of killed me. It's like you just kind of put the nail in the coffin, and I had nothing.
You had energy when I brought up Jeff Weaver.
Yeah, that was about it. That was about it. Jeff Weaver and J.D. Drew, those two guys give me energy. Lots of energy.
What about A.J. Burnett?
A.J. Burnett, too. He does, too.
Is Barry Zito now on that list? Ted Lilly is. Gil Meshar, I'm sure.
Yes. But no, see, I used to like Barry Zito at one point. I just don't think he's at that point anymore.
You just don't think he's worth Vernon Wells' money?
I like Vernon Wells. I think that was a good deal. Or fair deal.
Considering the market, it was a good deal.
Yes, yeah. It was a fair
considering
deal.
Considering the market,
I also thought Carlos Lee was a bad deal, even though he's a little bit fat now.
And I think I was right earlier this offseason when I said the Alfonso Soriano deal. It turns out to be a pretty good deal considering the market.
No, it's still not a good deal. They gave him 7 years. They still have plans on him going to center field, right?
He's got an explosive bat.
Offensively, he's very exciting. I will not deny you that.
Plus, here's my problem. I've never seen a guy that looks at the scoreboard more when he plays defense. What's he going to do in Wrigley? They got a crappy old scoreboard. They're old school. He's not going to be able to check up on his stats every, 2 minutes. Because when I've seen this guy play, and I think you remember when we were in Philadelphia and he was playing, and all he did was look back. We were sitting right behind him. All he did was look back and check out the scoreboard the entire game.
Well, that's not looking at his stats, because if he's on the field... None of his stats are showing up, right?
Yeah, but he was counting his solo home runs because he hit a couple of jacks.
I don't think that move's not going to do him anything though. And that's not. I'm not anti-Cub. I'm not a Cubs basher by any means. But I don't think that signing is going to really do anything for them. Nor will Ted Lilly or Jason Marquis.
You know what signing was pretty good? The Ben Wallace signing. That's right, folks. You should be going to TalkBulls.com and following the Bulls championship run.
Did you see the game yesterday?
I did not. I forgot it was on. I was snowboarding all day.
They played They played so well the first half, and then the third quarter came, and they had a chance to put the game away, and they failed repeatedly to do so, and the Phoenix Suns just did what the Phoenix Suns did. And
win.
That was a heartbreaking end to the game. Oh.
Yeah, they have the game... led and Barbosa hits the three, game over.
But Ben Gordon has balls.
Ben Gordon is showing to be a man. He's getting a lot better. And I've slammed Ben Gordon a lot. The guy is not afraid to take the big shots. The guy is developing in a much more complete player, especially offensively. He's no
he's
longer just a
taking
jump shooter.
over,
He
because
drives to the lane. He gets fouled.
Deng was pretty much non-existent that second half. Nocioni really didn't do much at all game. Ben Gordon took over, and like I said, he showed some balls. He's shown some balls over the past couple weeks. So kudos to him.
Kudos. Those were good candy bars when I was a kid.
Kudos.
Some kudos and Capri Sun.
Now what about the Bears? So since we're going to the Bulls, what about the Bears?
Well, the Bears. I mean, you can listen to Sean Salisbury, who says Brian Griese should be the quarterback. You can listen to a lot of things. But you know what? I'm going to actually do a little bit of Bear talk for about 2 minutes and give you my keys to the Bears' victory. Number one, you start Cedric Benson, and you hand the shit out of the ball to that man. That man is a workhorse. He's a power running back, and he should get 25 carries a game. Thomas Jones should still get action. He should still be in on third downs most of the time, and he should still see 8 or 10 carries, probably more like 10. I think 35 carries for the Bears is a good number, especially considering the winter. And I think Thomas Jones can be involved in receiving plays and he'd still get a lot of snaps. But Cedric Benson, how anyone could say he is not the number one running back on the Chicago Bears, is a buffoon.
I don't like Benson, but I do agree with you. He has been the better running back this year. He's running straight down. He's going full force straight ahead, whereas Thomas Jones seems to be dancing a little bit too much.
Number two, Ron Turner. Head remove. Out of your ass, please. Ron Turner has been mediocre all season. He's went from having great games and great play calling to having poor play calling. And no doubt it's been a result of the same way Rex Grossman's season. He's had great games and he's had absolutely atrocious games. And it kind of goes hand in hand with the play calling. And obviously, to an extent, Rex is also responsible for those poor games. But when you try to establish the pass first, every single week, you are not going to be in good shape because you end up digging yourself into a hole. And I also would like to say that Ron Turner, the only reason he looks decent as a coordinator is because we had John Shoup and Terry O'Shea. The Chicago Bears have not had a history of very good offensive coordinators for some time, since Ron Turner and the Eric Kramer era, which was a fun era to watch offensively, even though we had Dave Wannstedt as a head coach. Number three, Rashid Davis. I love him. Great story. He's made some big catches for the Bears this season, but the man is not near what Mark Bradley is. Mark Bradley needs to be on the football field. Mark Bradley is a playmaker. We need as many playmakers as possible on the offense. Not to mention, I think our wide receivers need to take a look at some of these tapes, and especially Rashid Davis, because he's not coming back and getting the ball. He's not playing defense. And yes, quarterbacks are going to throw interceptions, but wide receivers need to help out their quarterback and make sure that the guys aren't getting picks, and take them out. Because those could have been two interceptions that were not had. It had Rashid Davis got his head out of his ass and played a little bit of defense on the offensive side. Because if you watch good receivers, you're going to have quarterbacks that are going to throw the ball in positions that, yeah, the ball could get picked. But good receivers, they go up and get the ball or at least prevent an interception. And that's how you make big plays. And our receivers need to figure that out and start doing it because they're making Rex Grossman look worse. That said, Rex Grossman, he is the starter. He should be the starter. He needs to elevate his game, elevate his level of maturity, and focus. Go with the drop-offs. Use running back screen passes. Find Clark on easy hits. Go with some creative plays to get him confidence early in the game. Don't just sit there and throw long passes. But more importantly, let's not rely on Rex Grossman to win this game. Let's rely on our running game to take control of time of possession. Let Rex Grossman use play action to his advantage. Use running back screens to his advantage. And our offense get points, but keep the ball in their hands so our defense can be rested and able to actually play good defense. And number five, it can't be even solved here. I don't even know if we're on number five anymore. I've lost track.
What was number four?
But we need a new safety. Chris Harris is garbage in pass coverage. Todd Johnson was decent. Hopefully he'll be ready for that playoff game. Mike Brown, I love the guy, but we got to find a safety that can actually cover to go with Daniel Manning, who's going to make rookie mistakes, but Manning's going to be a good safety for a long time. But Chris Harris is absolutely terrible in anything pass coverage. I mean, terrible, terrible. There's not enough speed. He's great against the run. He plays the run strong, but you know what? We need some guys that can, because our pass defense has gotten burned. Oh, and we need Charles Tillman and Nathan Vasher. That is key.
Is that number nine?
Key. Basically put, the Bears have looked like piss the last 4 weeks. And now the only blessings to that is a lot of those games we were winning into the second half and winning pretty handily, and maybe we lost focus. That's the only thing I can hope. But you know what, people? Let's remember. We win 13 games. We're going to buy. We're in the NFC, which is not as good of a conference.
Yes.
And you know what? They have the talent. They have the ability to put it together. And hopefully they get some fire in their asses and they turn it on. But I know there isn't just an on switch. And I'm not the most confident person when it comes to the Bears right now. However, I'm an optimist. Super Bowl, here we come. Bears, Chargers.
You are awesome today, man.
So get your
today,
ass
man.
To TalkBears.com and freaking talk about it.
You are rolling today.
You know how much I'm rolling?
You're,
you know how much I hate hockey?
You're doing,
and how much I don't talk about hockey?
There we go.
TalkBHawks.com will open today if I get off my ass and get the site back on. Because the Blackhawks are close to the playoffs, even though Martin Havelaad has not played that great as of late. And Havelaad is a superstar, so I expect him to put more points in the net. Get us some more goals. Because the Blackhawks are even playing fun hockey.
This
the sports
awesome.
In Chicago are doing good.
This is awesome. Wow.
Bobby Boulin is living up to his contract. 39 saves yesterday against the Blues. The team looks terrible for two periods, comes out, scored 4 goals in the third period. They get a win over an improving Blues team, albeit it's terrible. So, folks, remember, you got a lot of great sights here. You got some energy. We got a city that's passionate about football, baseball, basketball, even hockey right now, despite dollar bill words. So get your asses onto the network and log in and chat and talk about all the sports you want to and talk about whatever the hell else you want to. And remember, and I hope you enjoyed the show, Mario did a half-assed job, but you know what? He's still there. He's still the host of this show along with me. And we hope that we entertain you every time you listen to this thing. Oh, and Mike Tyson, cokehead apparently.
We'll see you next time.